after a brief, unanticipated hiatus for vacation.
Welcome back, Anna.
Thanks. Welcome back, Aline. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. I'm Anna, and my pronouns are she and her.
I'm Aline, and my pronouns are also she and her.
Every couple of weeks, we will get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think, and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 107, Movie Advisory, Spring 2019. This is a follow-up on episode 95, which we will link in the show notes, and it's going to encompass the first-run movies that we saw between last October, did you say?
Yes.
And Sunday.
Between October and Sunday.
So we've got a chunk of movies to get through, and our rating system is, would we see it again, yes or no? And what we try to do is talk about the appeal factors of the movie and decide who we would recommend it to if we had a library patron or friend asking us, should they see this movie, and so on. That's how movie advisory works. And since we're librarians, as previously discussed, we are going to go alphabetically. Aline, throwing it to you.
The first alphabetical movie we saw in our list, encompassing October 2018 to April 2019, is Aquaman. You may have seen Aquaman. You may love Aquaman. We appreciated Aquaman.
I appreciated Aquaman a lot more than I thought I was going to.
It was a lot more fun than the DC movies that we have seen before.
With the exception of Wonder Woman. And I would say that it was funnier than Wonder Woman.
Yep.
And it had...
Temuera Morrison.
Thank you. Who you might know better as Jango Fett in the Star Wars prequels.
Or you might just know him as an awesome Kiwi actor who has been in lots of movies.
Jason Momoa was fun to look at. Patrick Wilson was in this movie.
Oh my gosh. His CGI chignon
right.
was unparalleled.
It's worth watching just for the CGI underwater hair.
It really is.
That they had to figure out how the fancy hair would go underwater. And so I would give this movie, I think it's a, there is some violence and probably a couple of curses. But otherwise it's a pretty, you know, tween and up action movie. Accessible to anyone who's interested in a superhero movie and has watched all the Marvel movies.
Yeah, I don't have the canonical knowledge to know if we are infuriated or placated by it. Did you mention that Nicole Kidman
is his mom,
and she is a goddess of the undersea realm? And his dad, of course, is just a humble fisherman.
Right.
Who somehow made it from New Zealand to Maine.
Yeah, yeah, as you do.
Where he lives in lonesome single daddom. Before we get into this too much, I wanted to remind us that we have been relegated to cheap nights and matinees.
Right.
In the wake.
In the wake
of the death of MoviePass, or the death of the MoviePass that we knew and loved.
Right.
We believe that MoviePass continues as an entity. We did not renew our annual membership because we spent the last 4 to 5 months of our year-long membership not being able to use anything.
Yeah.
So
RIP for the last time, MoviePass. It did expand our horizons. We saw some things we wouldn't have seen otherwise. We went to the art house more than we would have otherwise, and we still intend to go back and support them. But we intend to do a lot of things. So, final word on Aquaman. I would see it again.
Yeah, I would love to doze through it on a Sunday afternoon at home.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was fun. I like a superhero movie that you don't have to think too hard about. And there was some really interesting effects with the underwater, like, beings.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was cool. What's next on our list?
Next, alphabetically, but first in our hearts, is Captain Marvel, a superhero movie featuring Carol Danvers, who is awesomely played by Brie Larson, also featuring a lot of Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury.
Full disclosure, we saw it twice in the theater.
And, of course, let us not forget Goose, her orange
cat friend. No spoilers here. We are so full of spoilers, I don't even know what I'm saying. But yes, Goose, the orange cat friend, played by four different cats. We have retweeted and tweeted about Goose ad infinitum, and right. We will continue to stand for Goose.
This episode should come out right before the Avengers movie drops, so we are going to go ahead and go on the record that we would like Goose to take care of Thanos.
Yes. You've got it in you, Goose. We're here.
I want everyone to see Captain Marvel.
One of the things that Anna said after we saw it was that it seems to be engineered to make fanboys wild with rage. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, Nick Fury's doing dishes. I was like, oh, okay. And apparently there are some, like, underminings of toxic masculinity embedded in the movie. And
yeah, I mean,
we're pro.
It's very pro, like, Air Force and USA Earth. But it also was co-directed by a woman and written, and you can tell. And I, for one, welcome our female overlords. Speaking of female overlords.
Next up, we have Colette, which we saw at the Art House, starring Keira Knightley as the writer Colette, who you may or may not know about. She is pushed by her Dominic West-playing husband to publish novels under his name when he discovers that she's a great writer. Yes, he's named Willie in the movie. And it goes on to detail how he makes her a marketing wonder in Paris of the time. And the movie ends just as she leaves him, which is right when I want the story to start.
So we've seen a few movies like this where I turn to you 10 minutes into the movie and I say, I can't wait until she leaves him.
Right.
And then you spend the whole movie being like, why has she left him yet? And yes, by the time the movie is over, you're like, now can we have the movie where she gets to be herself and not have to deal with him anymore?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Because she had a long life after that.
She did. That was when we jumped over to Wikipedia and we're like, that's the movie
that's
we
just
want.
The beginning of the story. So she was bisexual at the very least, and so my little gay heart was warmed by scenes where she...
Missy, her heiress, amour.
Yeah.
I liked her.
I did too.
She was my type.
So, if you have any patrons who like LGBT-oriented films, I think Colette is a reasonable thing to recommend. It was good. It was a biopic.
Biopic.
It was entertaining.
It was. I liked it. It was a costume drama that had, like, some lady power in it that I wanted to be more powerful.
Pointy Keira Knightley, but she did a good job.
She did a real good job. I was not distracted by her Keira Knightliness, which I was fearful of.
I was ready to be. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Right into another costume drama, The Favorite, which is a lot more surreal in parts, which is about Queen Anne and the ladies vying for her favor.
So it's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, who did The Lobster and brings a skewed view to things that is really, really engaging and entertaining and cohesive.
The Favorite was Oscar nominated for a reason. All of its principals, Emma Stone, Olivia Colman, and Rachel Weisz, I believe, were up for Oscars. So,
and they were great.
They were fabulous.
And they were having a good time.
You should just do a double feature, Colette and The Favorite.
One of the things that was really striking about The Favorite was the costuming was black and white.
Yeah, mostly.
And I read an article that I'll link in the show notes about the lace on some of the costumes being laser cut vinyl.
Nice.
And it's kind of evident that there's something surreal going on with the costumes.
Well, the whole movie, like the rabbits everywhere and the overindulgence of the cake and the just like everything is a little extra.
Right, the cake is dyed a color that didn't exist at the time. And the fancy gentlemen are made up and powdered and wigged and patched as you might expect, but they are beyond what they're, was
right. So what I would say about The Favorite is of the like historical movies that we have seen, things from it like float back into my mind more than other movies, like just the shooting costume Rachel Weisz has.
Oh yeah. I should put a picture of that in the show notes.
So, you know, any of your adult patrons who are looking for a interesting historical film, I think The Favorite is a good one.
And if you liked Amadeus, there's like a surreal element to Amadeus that I think is held here in The Favorite. I realize I'm going back 30 years, but sometimes I do that. Some people liked Amadeus.
Isn't that a song, Like Me, Amadeus?
I think it's Rock Me, Amadeus. Oh, and now we have a musical obsession.
Oh, boy. Okay, segueing up,
The Girl in the Spider's Web. The Girl in the Spider's Web. The Girl in the Spider's Web.
So, this is the continuation of the Millennium series, post-Stieg Larsson. The first entry in the franchise starring Claire Foy as Lisbeth Salander. And it was perfectly serviceable if you want to see Queen Elizabeth kick ass and be extremely competent and, like, drive cars and shoot people. Although I don't think she shot that many people. Be a sort of action, Swedish action hero? I don't know how to describe it, but...
The scene that is in the preview where she is punishing a man for doing... society and his wife
ill
is evocative of the themes, and it gives you what you need to know. If you want more of that, watch it. If you don't.
Yeah. I mean, we like an action movie with a female lead. So,
and we like Lady Revenge. I felt like she was a force of nature in the movie, that it wasn't super male gazy. Like, she had, like, bare arms all the time, but there weren't, like, these loving pan shots down her arm as she was holding a knife to somebody's throat.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
That you sometimes see.
Yep.
And I appreciated that. I mean, Claire Foy is a beautiful woman. I appreciate beautiful women. I don't like when a movie is terribly male-gazy.
Right.
Well, I don't like bangs, so yes.
Halloween!
Oh my gosh, the Halloween that came out this last year was so enjoyable for me, a horror movie fan, a fan of the Halloween franchise, of Halloween the original, of Halloween H2O. I am here for it.
I was also here for it. So, it stars your Jamie Lee Curtis, who everyone else thinks is overly paranoid grandmother.
And she's frazzled and older, and she has
booby-trapped her house.
She is a glorious crone.
Yeah.
In the best sense.
Yeah. So if you like the first Halloween, I think you will like the most recent Halloween as well, because it's very in the spirit of the first one, I think.
And Judy Greer plays her daughter.
That's
as
right.
A very sort of buttoned-up, yuppie type of
like, oh, mom.
Mom, well, don't be ridiculous.
She was raised to, like, have survival skills, and, like, no one ever showed up. Until...
Dun, dun, dun.
In the horror vein, and we expanded more on this in our Two Bossy Dames guest post, which we will link in the show notes.
If you don't subscribe to Two Bossy Dames, you should. And they had us edit an episode of their newsletter.
I mean, for us, it was an episode. I think it's usually called an issue.
An issue. We episoded an issue of their newsletter. And we talked about time loops, which occur in Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to you. We watched Happy Death Day on DVD in preparation for seeing Happy Death Day to you in the theater. And it was fun.
I knew it would be enjoyable. It's not often that I see a horror movie and I'm like, you know what, we should watch that.
Right, and we saw those previews when they were in previews, and we were like, yeah, yeah. And we didn't manage to see it in the theater, but it was just a luck thing.
Happy Death Day sequel involves the same time loop situation, only it's a little more speculative, fiction-y, sci-fi than it is horrific. I mean, there are still people getting stabbed and falling to their death, etc. Don't worry about that.
But it's like a comedy, horror, sci-fi movie.
It's really fun. I mean, if you can handle some fake blood and baby masks, I think it's worth a try. The Happy Death Day franchise, I would give it to someone who wanted some kind of funny horror.
Yeah, I would give it to people who enjoyed the endless franchises like Friday the 13th and Child's Play and Scream.
You don't think that? Well, that's true. Scream.
You know, I think that there's like more humor to it, but I think that people who enjoy the franchises, which end up having to like rehash some stuff,
right? Also, and again, we enjoy enjoyable. This being female led, just like Halloween.
Yep.
Halloween.
And the actor who is the lead in it is engaging, and there are a couple of things that we aren't super into. If you have been a longtime listener, the central character Tree's mom has died in one timeline, and that is never happy for us. And
I cried
in the second one, Happy Death Day to You. It gets to the point where she realizes that she can reset the timeline and go back to like fix the things that they're working on fixing by killing herself. And so her repeated suicides are played for laughs, which are not my favorite.
Right. It was like a special bargain for us.
Two for one.
And yet we still like the movie. So that is that's a pretty good endorsement, really.
Yeah, I think that tells you something.
The switching gears completely. The Hate U Give is the adaptation of the best-selling book by Angie Thomas, and it's about a girl who witnesses the fatal shooting of her childhood best friend at the hands of a police officer, and then has to deal with the aftermath of that. And Amanda Stenberg was great.
If you haven't read the book or seen the movie, the young woman at the center of the story lives in the neighborhood that she grew up in and attends a fancy private school across town.
So she has to do some code switching.
Yeah.
And I think the movie did a good job of like demonstrating that. I have not read the book yet, so I can't speak to its faithfulness to the source material. Was Angie Thomas involved in the...
She was involved in the film.
Okay.
I also haven't read the book. I cried like 3 times in the movie, which we know is not a common thing for me.
Right, that is. But maybe it's a common wipe people thing. Like, I think white people are supposed to watch this movie and cry and feel bad, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It was well done, and the actor who played her dad is the guy from Grimm, and he was great. And she has a white boyfriend who is
clueless,
a white guy.
Oh my god.
And it's a good movie. I knew, because the book came out and it got a film deal really promptly, I knew that I was like, I'm not gonna read it, I'm gonna watch the movie. And I'm not surprised by that. That's something that I do. And it was good. I recommend it.
How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, the third installment of the animated franchise featuring Hiccup and the dragon Toothless.
And the daddification of Hiccup.
Right, the daddification of Hiccup.
We watched How to Train Your Dragon 1 and How to Train Your Dragon 2 in the 2 days before we saw How to Train Your Dragon 3 in the theater. And we were totally immersed in this world, and we had a really good time watching them and enjoying the dragons and seeing things come around.
I mean, speaking of crying, I cried when we watched the first one. Right. When we watched the second one, and when we watched the third one in the movie theater, and I didn't feel like there was any letdown between any of them. The third one just hit all the emotional beats right, and like everyone grew up and they did what they had to do, and it was fine. Everything is fine. I think it's a great trilogy of animated movies.
It's a great trilogy. If you haven't seen any of them, the dragon who is connected to the main character is named Toothless because he has retractable teeth. And if you have a cat in your life or have ever had a cat in your life, you will see lots and lots of parallels because we have a black cat in our lives and Toothless is a black dragon with big green eyes and very cat-like tendencies. We love Toothless, and we come to love the other Night Fury that appears in the third movie. And the other dragons are great too. But there are all these different species of dragon in the movies, and they have different characters. And the Night Fury Toothless, who's at the center of it, is the best because he's just like my cat Fiji and our cat Bean.
I know, right? Highest recommendation. Everyone must watch. Yeah. Don't care if you don't like animation or dragons.
Yeah. They're definitely not just for kids, which I feel about all animated movies. Next, we saw Isn't It Romantic? With Rebel Wilson and Adam Devine and Liam Hemsworth. It is a romantic comedy in which Rebel Wilson is a woman who works for a magazine?
Architectural design firm?
Something like that. And she's very skeptical about romance and romantic comedies, and she falls asleep or gets knocked out or gets drunk and wakes up in one where everything is shiny and pretty, and like her apartment on her intern's salary is
suddenly ginormous.
Acres, you know, in professionally designed, and the super handsome client is inexplicably drawn to her.
The best thing about it is that she starts with a rant about romantic comedies before she gets translated to this alternate timeline, and she spends the time being like, wait, what's going on? Like, she is identifying the tropes as they happen and being like, oh, okay, so now this is happening? Great.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of like, what the heck is going on when she wakes up in a big fabulous apartment? She's like Freaky Friday'd into it, and then she gets out of it. And it's a good romantic comedy. It's got a makeover montage, and it's got a
singing,
musical
number.
And if you saw the previews, you were like, okay, Rebel Wilson is in a romantic comedy, but it's more clever than that.
Yeah, it's better than it appears on the surface. Also, I can't tell the Hemsworths apart.
Right, I have to coach her on the Hemsworths. I can tell them apart, even though I can't tell the Chris's apart, but I can tell the Hemsworths apart.
Okay, great. So anyone looking for a romantic comedy, I think it tweaks the genre just enough to be interesting, but also it's still a romantic comedy when it comes down to it.
It is, and we are fans of the romantic comedy, and we liked it.
Yeah, see our previous episodes on this topic. The Kid Who Would Be King is one that we went to see with a kid in the theater.
We did, and the thing that you need to know about The Kid Who Would Be King is that The Kid Who Would Be King is played by the child of Andy Serkis, our good friend Gollum. And you can only kind of tell, like, around the eyes a little bit. But
did you spend the whole movie being like, how can you even tell? Because Gollum, he doesn't look like Andy Serkis.
No, but you know what Andy Serkis looks like because he's in Black Panther.
Right, right, right. So the idea is that Morgana is back, and she's threatening England, and this kid has drawn Excalibur from a construction site, and so he has to resist, along with all of his classmates, some of whom were previously bullying him, with a cameo by Patrick Stewart as old Merlin and a enjoyable young Merlin.
Yeah, he transmogrifies himself into this young, wild, and wacky-haired person. It was very enjoyable in the unrecognizability of most of the players, which as a person who likes People magazine and has been watching movies my entire life, I am sometimes distracted by celebrity personality when I see a movie. And so when I see a movie that is doing something with a relatively unknown cast or just has a cameo like the Patrick Stewart thing, it's very refreshing to me. I find it very immersive as an experience.
I thought it was a solid kid adventure movie.
Yeah.
Critics liked it a lot more than audiences, apparently.
Interesting.
So, take that how you will.
I feel like when we look at these Rotten Tomatoes results with the critics versus the audiences, I feel like me, audiences aren't as picky about filmmaking as critics are. And so critics might be like, oh, this is very well executed. And audiences are like, I fell asleep.
It was boring. Some of the action scenes in The Kid Who Would Be King, I was like, okay, we're galloping. Things are happening. But overall, it was good.
Yeah.
Give it to your action or interested child patron.
Or your King Arthur aficionado.
Right, your King Arthur aficionado should like it. I liked it.
Right. And you are a sword-wielding Valkyrie.
Right. Next up is one that we just saw 2 days ago.
Really? Has it only been 2 days?
It's only been 2 days since our lives were changed.
We saw Little, starring Regina Hall and Issa Rae. It is...
But it really stars Marseille Martin, who is the Littlified Jordan. So the setup is that Regina Hall is a very unpleasant person. The CEO of some kind of tech company and...
Her own tech company.
Right. And she is bespelled by a middle school kid into being little again. Much like big. A reverse big.
Yeah, it's a reverse big. Hence little.
Little. Right.
And there's a magic element and... There are many adventures. She wakes up in the morning and she's 13 instead of 35 or 38. And hilarity ensues.
Right, she has to go back to her old middle school because she's not allowed to not go to school.
Because a neighbor calls Child Protective Services. Right. I mean, I realize...
But she is still a deeply unpleasant person. And it takes her a while to adjust and maybe learn some lessons about herself. Her assistant is Issa Rae, who has to step up in the absence of the CEO and is the only one who really knows what's going on. And I would like to see Issa Rae in a lot more movies.
Yes, I would like to see Issa Rae everywhere, please and thank you. She is very enjoyable. This movie was fun. There were elements of it that were a little bit slow. I love 13 Going on 30, Freaky Friday, Big. What's the one with Zac Efron?
I haven't seen it, but I know which one you're talking about.
I love this trope. Maybe we should talk about this trope at some point. But I find it very enjoyable, and I like the realizing what the heck is going on thing, kind of like in a time loop. And I like the, well, how are we going to work this out, whether you have to go back to school or... You have to go to school and I have to go to work and I don't know how to do your job and you don't know how to be in the lunchroom situation when there's like the changing like in Freaky Friday. I just find it a lot of fun. It was good. And we like, again, to see movies with women at their centers. This was written and directed by a woman. And
Marseille Martin was involved in the production.
Yes, she is a 14-year-old mogul already, which is great. She's on Blackish. You may know her from Blackish.
Yeah, she's great. I look forward to seeing more from her.
She channels Regina Hall so effectively that after we finished the movie and Anna said something to the effect of, well, Regina Hall didn't really have a lot to do in the movie, and I was confused for a moment because I was like, what are you talking about? Oh, right, she was just at the beginning and at the end because it was Marseille Martin who was doing everything else and just channeling this extreme... corporate leader lady. It was great. She was great.
Moving on to Mary Poppins Returns, the
sequel?
The sequel to Mary Poppins. I was gonna say the sequel that no one was screaming for to Mary Poppins.
True. She comes back decades later. The Banks siblings are grown and Michael Banks, the boy, has children of his own, and he has tragically lost his wife.
Yes, and he's going to lose the house.
And he's going to lose the house. And
then bank shenanigans. I mean, bank shenanigans.
Not bank shenanigans.
Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins, and Lin-Manuel Miranda is a bicycle
lamplighter. He's a lamplighter, not a chimney sweep, yes. And Emily Mortimer is the bank's girl. I know she has a name, but I don't remember it.
Jane and Michael Banks.
Right. Okay, so she has grown up to be a suffragette.
Right, she should be a lesbian.
She really should be. She's wearing sweater vests like nobody's business.
But instead she's interested in Lin-Manuel, which is fine.
Just in passing, Lin-Manuel is a charming elf himself.
Who could not be interested in him? But she should probably, you know, embrace one of her sisters in... suffragism.
That article that I can't find. I was going to link it in the show notes, and I started looking for it, and I cannot find it. I read a piece that was talking about how the songs in Mary Poppins Returns map onto the songs in the original, and the musical team from the original movie worked on Mary Poppins Returns, and I think that there is some good in that, and I think that it's the reason that we were not as ensorcelled by Mary Poppins Returns as we might have liked to be.
If you have Lin-Manuel on your staff, maybe have him help you
with the songs. Knows, the man knows how to score a musical. Oh. Look at Moana. Look at Hamilton. Look at In the Heights.
Oh, okay. So that was just okay. I mean, I'm not sure who I would give Mary Poppins Returns to. Someone who was like, I just need a movie for my kids. Okay, sure.
And maybe for, like, littler kids than yours.
Yeah, like five,
six-year-old. It seemed to be, we took your kid, and it seemed to be, like, a little young. Yeah.
It was fine.
It was fine.
Would not watch again.
I wanted it to be better.
But no one was, like, let the sequel stop now, shall we?
Right. We don't need to go back to 50-year-old properties and update them or revisit them.
The next one, Miss Bala, was very poorly reviewed by critics.
Very poorly reviewed. And I gotta tell ya, I loved this self-saving princess.
I liked it too. Gina Rodriguez is this at the center of this story, which is adapted from a Spanish language film. And she gets drawn into a dangerous world of cross-border crime.
She's a makeup artist who lives in LA, and she has family in Tijuana, and so she heads down to help her
friend,
her best friend.
Right, her friend get ready for
this pageant.
Right.
And because she's a makeup artist, she's going to help her do her makeup and hair. And then there's some mistaken identity action.
Her friend gets kidnapped, and she's trying to find her, and she ends up, like, with this drug gang. And she has to figure out how to get out of it. But then the U.S. government is like, well, while you're there, you could give us information or we're going to ruin your life. It's very believable.
So she has to get some stuff across the border and she has to maintain her cover when she is with these drug dealers. Of course, one of the drug dealers is into her and she stays true to herself and she gets out of the situation and she is in extreme danger a lot of times and completely freaked out. She's like not screaming and whimpering. She's more like an, oh my God, how am I going to survive this kind of thing. It was real good. I liked it a lot.
I think seeing Gina Rodriguez in this role, it says that she has a future as an action hero. And I agree. She was great.
Yeah, she was great. And Anthony Mackie is in it.
If you want to see
some Avengers action. Next up, before Christmas, we saw The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, which is another Keira Knightley thing and includes Morgan Freeman and Helen Mirren, which is a lot of fun. This was a fever dream parallel Nutcracker story. It was not The Nutcracker. It had some magic. I really liked the over-the-top costumes and the set decoration.
Yes,
and
I
Morgan
think that
Freeman
might have been Mirren
and Helen Mirren's wildness.
Right,
but the story wasn't that interesting, and
it was like slow.
It promoted Misty Copeland being in it, and all she really was doing was some ballet
it was like a dance
over the
cameo.
Closing credits.
No, she had a she was
there was their piece in
the
middle.
She performed in the middle, but I feel like it needed more Misty Copeland and. I don't know. It needed a better through line.
It was beautiful and sparkly and visually stunning.
Again, your younger children, 6, 7 maybe, because there's a little scariness. Helen Mirren's, like, circus clown buddies are kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it just didn't hang together very well, sadly.
Yeah.
I was more interested in Ralph Breaks the Internet, which we watched right after we watched Wreck-It Ralph.
Which I fell asleep during and then watched on my own the next day and discovered that I had fallen asleep at the very beginning of Wreck-It Ralph. I don't know why. It was charming and good and I enjoyed it. And our arcade has the bartending game. that is in both movies. We liked Ralph Breaks the Internet a lot. Renata tweeted about having seen it just this week, saying that she was outraged that nobody told her that Gal Gadot led a racing family in Ralph Breaks the Internet. And sorry about that, Renata. We were very excited about it and squealing in the theater, and then we forgot to tell you.
Sorry. It was sweet and funny. And of course, the highlight for me was the Disney princesses, probably.
Right, there was like this big slumber party action.
And they were voiced by like the ones that voiced them. Right,
Yeah, they were voiced by the actors
who original, voiced them. Like Jodie Benson.
Yeah.
I can't even. So, I mean, it says something that's my favorite part of the movie. It's not about that, but that's still my favorite part.
But it continues the friendship between Ralph and Vanellope, and it's charming and good, and there are glitches, and the internet happens, and the way it is portrayed when they are outside the game into the internet, very enjoyable. Yeah. I like that kind of thing. It's like Tron, but not.
I feel like we must have talked about
We have already talkinged.
We did some good talks about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I think it was in the Oscar award show episode, maybe?
Probably. In my notes here, we have blurbs about each movie to make sure that we don't forget about them. And underneath Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I have written OMG, 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 greatest film ever made.
Okay, all right.
In case you were wondering how I felt about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Given this movie the greatest compliment and purchased a copy on DVD for our own repeated watchings. And we will do the same to Captain Marvel. I'm not sure about any of the other movies on this list.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that we'll buy for $4 in the bin at Target.
Right, but I'm talking about it has been released. We are going to buy it.
Right, sometimes we get in the car on Tuesday night and go to Target and buy the movie. Just like we pre-order books to show our support. If you didn't see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse or you haven't heard about it, it is spectacular comic book-inspired animation. It is an interesting story about all the spiders, man and women.
Alternate realities.
In the alternate realities. They are characterized beautifully. I don't know anything about canon. I was completely sucked in. I have always liked Spider-Man. I thought he was really hot because he didn't have a mouth. And
let's analyze that, shall we?
Let's not. But we really, really, really liked it a lot. It was just so stunning. And there was a tweet that I started looking for and I couldn't find, so I can't link to it in the show notes, where someone had said, you know, for the last 2 months, I've been hearing all of y'all rave about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and after finally having seen it last night, I can't help but think you undersold it.
Nice. Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it was, it's, I have really not, good. No one that I have talked to has been disappointed in it in any way, even though everyone is raving about it.
So, add us onto the list of ravers.
Woot, woot.
Changing gears yet again. Going to Us, the follow-up to Get Out by Jordan Peele, in which Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and their kids go on a beach vacation and meet up with their doppelgangers who want to kill them.
Or just be them.
Or be them. So this is a movie that might benefit from more than one watching once you know the twist.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a spoiler to say, like, it seems like everyone has a double, and all the doubles are, like, showing up to take over at the same time. But, like, how does that work? Because they seem to be mirroring the behavior of the people above.
Well, and there, it's not clear where the doubles originate. So it's not like a Never Let Me Go situation where they're clones who are having their organs harvested for your use.
What is those? A spoiler for that?
Yeah. You didn't know what Never Let Me Go was about?
No.
Okay, so Never Let Me Go is about these people who, like, live at a boarding school, but they are clones of people who are, like, living in the real world, but their purpose is to be extra organs for when things start to go wrong. Yeah, I don't remember
what the purpose of the us doppelgangers is. The movie starts out by saying that there's a nationwide network of underground tunnels, abandoned underground tunnels.
That don't seem to be actually abandoned.
Right. So, consensus was, in our viewing group, that we found Get Out more watchable, but I kind of enjoyed the, like, weird humorous moments in Us, like when Winston Duke is trying to scare them off from the top of the driveway.
Winston Duke plays the whitest black man in the world. He does this voice. It's really, really hilarious. Because they are affluent people living in Southern California. They are going to their beach house. That's where all this is going down. They have their, like, fancy friends, their fancy white friends down the road.
Elizabeth Moss. I feel like I both want to read a piece that explains how all this works, and also it may be one of those movies where if you don't think about it too hard, like a time travel movie, if you don't think about it too hard, how it's actually supposed to work, you might like it better, you know?
Possibly. My notes say that I loved the slasher elements, so I'm here for, like, a violent knife death in a horror movie for some reason.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. I have not spent a lot of my life on the East Coast, but I have lived on the East Coast, and I have, like, been to Coney Island, and I have been down the shore, and I have been to the Cape and to, like, Maine beaches, and I am deeply, deeply suspicious of
those creepy amusement parks,
East
for sure.
Coast boardwalk amusement park beach action. Now, this movie is set in California, but the elements of this beach amusement park boardwalk thing are not my knowledge of the West Coast beaches. It's more sort of like Coney Island, East Coast, Atlantic City kind of action. So I am deeply suspicious. We just got back from the Cape and we survived. And I am happy to report that we did not run into any doppelgangers, but we will be in Maine in July. So stay tuned.
I think it's worthwhile for anyone interested in horror to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think Jordan Peele is doing interesting, interesting things.
Yeah. And it made me want to watch Get Out again, so.
Yeah.
Shifting gears to Venom, which we have mentioned before as something we wanted to see, and we finally picked it up on DVD, so it's a little bit of a cheat here, but
this is basically the interval where it was in the theater. We are not that far behind, so we're talking about it.
Tom Hardy is bonded to an alien entity who has its own agenda, but seems to be able to coexist in him without destroying his body somehow, which is happening to most of the other people being taken over.
And he doesn't die or melt or evaporate.
His ex-girlfriend is Michelle Williams in
the Michelle Williams role.
Right. You wanted to see this, and I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought I would. It was funny and also, like, dark and the person Tom Hardy was before being occupied was really obnoxious. And so watching him, like, be tormented from within was kind of satisfying.
Well, I wanted to see it because I like Venom. And I wanted to see it more when I saw someone tweet about it being the most accurate representation of a person coping with anxiety that he had ever seen. And I'm not going to be able to find that quote either, but that made me want to see it as someone who is coping with anxiety, because they put it in the context of doing constant battle with yourself.
Yeah.
When you are occupied by this alien symbiote, you are not in total control. And when your brain is working against you, you're not in total control. And that was super relatable to me. And the thing that I found even more relatable than the anxiety analogy was his predilection for tots.
Oh, yeah. He really likes tater tots.
I'm here for that.
He doesn't like anything else, just tater tots.
Just wants tots. So that's something that...
So, again, if you have exhausted your mainstream Marvel movies and you don't want to watch Batman versus Superman, let's not anyone get to that point. But it's right there on the second tier, you know, with Aquaman, and it's way above Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, well, and it's got a little bit of a standalone vibe, like Doctor Strange and Aquaman, you know? So, watch Venom. You can watch Venom if you don't like any of the things.
Even if you don't like superhero movies, I feel like it'd be fine.
Yeah, it's interesting in a body snatcher kind of way.
Yeah, it's sort of got, it's just like, it's an alien from outer space, so yep. It's not even really a superhero movie in that way. It's just like, hey, aliens. Speaking of aliens.
We keep saying changing gears, and I don't know if we need to group things by genre next time instead of alphabetically, but moving from Venom to Widows.
Alphabetically.
No, it has to be alphabetical. Widows stars Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Cynthia Erivo, and...
I didn't put the blonde one's name in, sorry.
I don't remember her name.
Really tall blonde lady.
She's like 6'2". I think she might be Eastern European. These four women are left behind by a disaster in a heist that their husbands have embarked upon. And they are on the hook for the lost proceeds.
Daniel Kaluuya is putting them on the hook.
And so Daniel Kaluuya is going to kill them all because he can't, because he wants the money or the diamonds or whatever it is. Totally doesn't matter.
Her name is Elizabeth Debicki.
Elizabeth Debicki. Yes. Thank you for looking that up. So it's a crime heist movie. These four women from very different
background,
crime lives. Right. Viola Davis is an extremely affluent woman who has been living off the proceeds of her husband's crime. And Her husband Liam Neeson. So she has the super fancy apartment and the fluffy little white dog. And Michelle Rodriguez has her fancy dress shop that has been funded by her husband's crimes. And Elizabeth Debicki has...
I mean, her boyfriend, husband, kept this motorcycle in her apartment. I don't think we knew that much about it. Anyway, each of them was, like, a part of the gang, and then they all got blown up.
But then Cynthia Erivo is hired to be part of
right?
the gang.
Right? She's a great runner.
She's an outsider. But, it's good.
Well, here's what you need to know.
Okay.
Screenplay by Gillian Flynn and Steve McQueen.
Oh, Steve McQueen, the director.
Yes.
Not Steve McQueen.
The actor.
The old dead actor.
Right. So, you've got tension, you've got a little twist, you've got discussion of, like, men and women and how they deal with things differently, and I feel like not enough people went to see Widows, so
yeah.
I tried to sell someone on Widows today at work.
Was it a coworker or a patron?
A patron. I was like, have you seen that one? It's good.
Did you put a hold on it for them?
I did not. She was right there. I handed it to her.
Oh, perfect. I feel like I need to go tell one of my coworkers who doesn't get out to the movies as much as we do, but I occasionally tell him that he should see things, and we've got it in the collection, so yeah. I think I should tell him.
Would see it again.
Yeah, yeah. Some movies, like, have a twist that make you want to track back and see where your hints were. Sometimes there's the twist and you're like, yeah, I saw that coming. And sometimes you're like, I want to see how they laid...
I want to see how they laid that out, right.
Yeah.
So that's one of those.
The last one on this list is another one we cheated and saw on DVD because it came out fast enough.
I feel like it was all... this is The Wife with Glenn Close, which was Oscar nominated, and it was like... Only at...
It was at the art house for 2 weeks.
It wasn't available for us to see at the time that we could see it. So we watched it on DVD. This was the other one on the list, like Colette, where we spent the whole movie being like, why is she still with this guy? When is she going to leave him?
Right. The parts of the story that we were like, when is she going to leave him, were told in flashback. We knew, watching The Wife, right, that she doesn't leave him. Because they are... in their 60s and are going off for him to receive the Nobel Prize for literature.
So he's going to receive the Nobel Prize. It's pretty clear. It takes forever for them to, like, come out and say it, but it's pretty clear that she's been writing all of his books
for the last 40 years.
I don't think that's even a spoiler. You can kind of tell that from the preview.
Well, that's what we thought from the preview. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so we're not going to ruin the ending, which is... unsatisfactory, but understandable.
It's based on a novel by Meg Wolitzer, who wrote The Interestings. You may know about her.
You should give this to all your middle-aged white patrons.
And especially if you've got, like, some grumpy middle-aged white ladies. It's good. There is some catharsis in watching it as a grumpy middle-aged white lady. I can say that.
What did your mom say about it?
Glenn Close's performance was extraordinary. She was robbed of her Oscar that she still hasn't gotten after decades in the business.
She'll get it sometime.
I think that my mom, I can't remember exactly, but I feel like she was on board with us in terms of, like, why didn't she kill
him? Why didn't she murder him? So, we have already discussed a few of the things. I just want to gloss over quickly. We really like What Men Want with Taraji P. Henson better than the movie What Women Want by Leaps and Bounds. It's a sort of remake where Taraji, much like in Little, is spelled and can hear the thoughts of men. Humorous, romantic subplot for her assistant.
Charming.
Charming. Romance for her.
Yeah.
Offer it to your romantic comedy searchers. We already talked about the Taron Egerton Robin Hood. We talked about Bohemian Rhapsody. We'll link to those. Things that we saw on DVD that came out recently. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. The less said about that, the better. So, at one point, I said to Aileen, why is this like this? And she was like, oh, it's Guy Ritchie. And I was like, is this what Guy Ritchie is like? And she said, yes. And so I know that I don't want to watch Guy Ritchie movies.
So I drew some parallels for her from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch all the way through to King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. And Anna's done with Guy Ritchie.
I am done with Guy Ritchie. Another movie that, if you're looking for some suspense and an interesting format, Searching with John Cho was really good.
It was a very interesting premise, and we watched the little thing on the DVD about how it was made, there's like a mini featurette.
Which is a little self-congratulatory, but informative.
But it's fascinating because they have this idea, and the whole movie is like embedded in social media and the internet and texts and all of these things where
it's basically from his screen of his computer.
Yeah. John Cho is a father whose daughter has gone missing. We saw previews for it and it looked interesting and we just didn't get out to see it. We had like other things.
This is one where it's really worth watching for the execution of the concept of like everything being through a medium. Plus John Cho.
John Cho.
Heart eyes. And the last one on our list, alphabetically, and not in our hearts, is Uncle Drew, which is a story about a basketball tournament in New York and a guy who loses his basketball team and has to go recruit some old-timers who are played by a mix of actual old-timers and an NBA star prematurely. Everyone is wearing super-aging makeup, but he is wearing extra super-aging makeup.
Right. Anna wanted to see this in the theater, and we didn't manage to see it in the theater. She is a basketball fan. She has been watching these players for most of her life. So we were really excited to see Lisa Leslie. It was funny to see Shaquille O'Neal in a gray wig. There were real basketball players, and there was a very humorous sort of like premise overall. And there was this rivalry. Nick Kroll played this one guy.
Yeah, the less Nick Kroll, the better. Yes. Really.
It was enjoyable.
It was enjoyable. If you like basketball, I think it's worth seeing. It was fun. It was definitely better than this last movie I remember that we watched. Called
Holmes and Watson.
Holmes and Watson. I'm just remembering that we watched a double feature last week. Of things that we missed in the theater or should definitely not have paid money for in the theater. And we are glad that we did. And so one of these falls under that category. And that is Holmes and Watson featuring
Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly
as the titular couple. And they do have a song that totally ships them together. And that's the best part of the movie. But overall, it's exactly what you might expect. It's not as good as Blades of Glory. It's not as good as Talladega Nights. Just go and watch one of those.
It's pretty dreadful. I thought that
it's kind of on the Robin Hood Men in Tights level, I'm afraid.
Right. I was willing to see it because Anna is a big Will Ferrell fan, and I enjoyed Talladega Nights, and I enjoyed Blades of Glory. I can see Will Ferrell being funny. And I love John C. Reilly. I have always loved him. And so I was ready. I was ready to enjoy this. And it was pretty dreadful.
It was pretty bad.
It was yeah.
just pretty bad. Anyway, moving on. So to follow that up.
These are both on the same day.
Yeah. Right after we finished Holmes and Watson, we put in On the Basis of Sex as a palate cleanser, which is about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her fight to take cases to the Supreme Court that would eventually overturn gender discrimination laws. And it did a great job of, like, dramatizing the struggle.
Felicity...
Huffman?
No.
No. Jones?
Felicity Jones plays Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Armie Hammer plays her husband, Marty. She does a good job of playing this living icon. I mean, many of us may have seen RBG, the documentary that has footage of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and herself in it. And it's kind of like watching Claire Foy play the Queen of England. You know, you see these biopics and it can be very interesting the way an actor will channel a person that we know.
Right, right. And she did a great job.
And she did a great job. It was very enjoyable.
The thing I wanted was for the story to go further.
Yep.
Like, I want the sequel now, you know, because basically she gets the Supreme Court, but you know there's, like, a ton of stuff that happened after that.
Right.
I feel like everyone should watch this because it hasn't been that long. And we are not equal still.
Right. All of this has happened in my lifetime.
Yeah, so...
And I am not quite a half century old. So it's very interesting. And it can be really interesting to see and to count on your fingers back and to be like, she was doing this in 1970. She was doing this in 1974. She was doing this in 1980. And see this stuff that has all happened in the lifetimes of our mothers and us.
Yep. So, this is a everyone watch.
Yeah.
Along with RBG. That would be a better doubleheader.
Right. Much better doubleheader. We've come to the end of the movie advisory.
RBG! RBG!
RBG!
So, she's as great as you and me.
Do you have an obsession, Anna?
A regular obsession?
Do you have a musical obsession, Anna?
Masquerade! Yeah, it's the song Masquerade from The Phantom of the Opera.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Okay.
You don't think that's accurate?
I think it is accurate. So,
okay, then.
Anna recently rewrote the lyrics to Masquerade to about single stream recycling, which just came to our neighborhood.
We'll link it in the show notes.
It will be linked in the show notes.
Single stream recycling is so exciting, you guys.
We have a giant bin and we can just throw everything in it. We don't have to carefully package our paper. And I mean, we still need to break down
single
the boxes.
Stream.
And she wrote a song about it. My musical obsession, I don't think we talked about this on a previous episode, and we are coming around to it happening this week again. The last Friday of the month at the basement in our adjacent town is 80s night. And if you have the fortitude or endurance or inclination, you can go to this establishment at 10 p.m.
Oh my God, it's so
on a
late.
Friday night
so
when
late.
They're just getting started and stay until 2 a.m. and dance to 80s music. And we did it a month ago, and we're going to do it again Friday, and it was a lot of fun, and we don't regret it.
I'm taking a nap first this time.
The first time we went, there were like seven of us in the group with several of my coworkers, and it was great music, and it was a lot of fun, and we didn't like dance wildly on the dance floor all night long. We stood around and played Name That Tune for the first half of the evening, and then we kind of stood up
and
we like swayed a little bit and bopped a little bit and shuffled our feet a little bit. I feel like I might have to get out on the floor earlier in the evening myself because it gets very crowded later, but when it's empty, I could go out and dance. That would be better. Anna's looking at me skeptically. So, TLDR.
Yeah, is there a musical obsession?
My musical obsession.
All of the 80s.
Is Blister in the Sun by the Violent Femmes, which I loved then and now.
Well, we just watched Gross Point Blank.
Yes. we did just watch Gross Point Blank, and it is on that soundtrack, and there's a lot of other music there, so maybe we'll watch some more of that. Do you have a regular obsession,
Anna? I have, four.
Okay, well, you can tell us about a few of them.
Fine. Number one is puzzles. I love puzzles.
Jigsaw puzzles?
Jigsaw puzzles.
We just recently reopened the back porch so that our jigsaw puzzle table is
also paint-by-number puzzles
season. Anna likes the way things fit together.
I do. I am obsessed with the Austin Playbook, which is the new release from Lucy Parker. It's a romance in her London Celebrity series. I am currently listening to it, and I would like us to finish recording this episode so I can be closer to continuing to listen to it. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'm also super obsessed with my new Pilot Vanishing Point fountain pen, which is ridiculously expensive, but I can fill with whatever color of ink I want, and I can click it in and click it out. Click it in, click it out, like this. So satisfying. And I have been using it all day. I'm afraid to lose it, so I'm keeping it very close. Do you have any obsessions, Aline?
I do. I always have obsessions. Stop clicking your pen. You just have to edit the clicks out.
I'm not going to. I'm leaving them in.
I'm obsessed with three books because we were on vacation last week and I read more than I have read in
the rest of the year.
The last year or so. I have spoken before on my compromised reading mojo, and I managed to pick up some books that interested me in the last little bit, so I want to tell you about them. The first is The Time Collector by Gwendolyn Womack. She wrote The Fortune Teller, which I spoke of on a past episode.
With Katie, I think.
With Katie Stover, yes. In The Fortune Teller, she is telling a story through flashbacks to 2,000 years and up to the present time about a tarot deck. In The Time Collector, the central characters are psychometrists, and psychometrists are people who can touch an object and sense its history, and they can go to a flea market and find something that was the axe that Lizzie Borden killed her parents with, and then they can track down its provenance and sell it for a hefty profit. And one of the main characters has known about his power since he was a teenager and has used it to profit, and also has started a foundation where he repatriates artifacts to disenfranchised persons. So one of the first things he found as a child was the doll of a slave girl, and he has tracked down her descendants and returned it to her. And he has various categories in his warehouse where he's working with Native American artifacts or personal memorabilia that was lost during the Holocaust and so on. So that's very interesting. And there's sort of like a romancy element to it because there is a young woman who has just discovered her powers, and she has found a fancy watch. And this is one of these fancy watches that was made by hand a couple hundred years ago. So the company that came down after this particular watchmaker, they want to buy it back for $1 million, and it solves all her problems. But then she gets sucked into this drama. And so it's got thriller elements and it's got little magical elements, and it's very interesting. The other two books that I am obsessed with are May selections on the library reads list. The first is The Flatshare by Beth O'Leary. And it is set in London, and it is charming. A woman has broken up with her boyfriend and needs a place to live, and she finds a flat share on Craigslist that is just unbelievably affordable because the person looking for a share is a night shift worker. And so he only needs the apartment between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, because that's when he will be sleeping during the week, and he'll spend weekends at his girlfriend's house, and he is working the rest of the time. And she takes this, and they don't meet until they've been living together for 6 months. They meet by accident after 6 months, but they've written notes to each other, and they get to know each other. And it's a very charming romantic comedy that has elements of reality in it. Her ex-boyfriend is a gaslighting stalker, and his current girlfriend, soon-to-be ex-girlfriend, is a little bit of an insensitive control freak. And how they come together and how it's resolved is is very charming and follows the rules that I lay out for romantic comedies, and I liked it a lot. And I am
you
in the...
You did. You didn't put it down much.
I didn't put it down much. This is true. And then I immediately picked up Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. And this is about the first son. So Alex's mother is the president, and he is 21 years old, and he's been living in the White House, and his mom is about to be reelected, and he and his sister and their shared best friend are the White House trio. So they are the celebrity youth of America. Their mutual best friend is the granddaughter of the vice president. So they are these privileged youths. They go to a royal wedding, and he knocks the crown prince... No, one of the princes. He knocks the prince over into the $75,000 wedding cake and creates an international incident. And so he and the prince are forced by their handlers to be fake best friends, which is just as good as fake dating. So he has to be fake best friends with Henry to sort of gloss this over. Like, they were just goofing around and they knocked over the cake. It wasn't a fist fight. And so
I'm totally going to read this as soon as you finish.
Yes. And so the fake best friendship blossoms into a romance because the prince is gay. Alex did not know he was gay until the prince kissed him. And the things that Alex goes through emotionally after being kissed by this prince when he totally thought he was straight. They're very relatable.
Are they relatable?
They're very relatable. So I'm about halfway through it, and they are stealing moments together and fostering their bromance in the public eye and making out in tack rooms and hotel rooms. And by making out, I don't mean making out. It's kind of got a new adult thing because the prince is 23 and Alex is 21, so they are grown up dudes able to do whatever they want. And it's interesting because they get drunk and they are playboys, but they're not anyway. I'm really liking it. I wasn't sure I was gonna like two privileged dudes getting their rocks off together, and I am charmed, and I look forward to finishing it.
Okay, well, that's an endorsement if I ever heard one.
Okay, we need to update you on the results of our What to Watch Next TV finals poll, which you may remember from an earlier episode.
In fourth place, we have The Fall, Season 2, with a whopping 5% of the vote. In third place, we have Fleabag, with 10% of the vote, which is... possibly not available on any of our streaming services, so
that's fine.
That was something that was a hesitation.
In second place, the runner-up spot, with 30% of the vote, Umbrella Academy.
Umbrella Academy! And the winner and champion of the March 2019 What to Watch Next TV bracket is...
Strike a pose.
The
55%
pose.
Of the vote.
55% of the vote. Now I am super excited to watch Pose, and we will be watching Pose.
And then we will be reporting back.
And we will report back to you all. Thank you so much for your participation in the vote, for your patience and attention to the bracket itself, and keep those suggestions coming in.
Yep, we'll probably also watch Paris is Burning.
Oh, right. We need to watch Paris is Burning. Yeah, I would be good to watch that first.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at BellwetherFriends, BellwetherFrends. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Tumblr. We are everywhere. Just not as often as we plan to be. If you want, you can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. I'm Anna. You can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
And if you leave us a review on iTunes, you could gloss over the consistency of our release schedule. I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, SurlySpice.
Our in and out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie. Bye.
Bye.